Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Is ending the conflict in Ukraine on the agenda? Maybe. China has offered a proposal, and it appears the UK, France, and Germany are sounding out the Zelensky regime on a proposal of their own. All will come to nothing if Russia's interests are not respected. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests, Martin Jay in Marrakesh. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. And in Budapest, we have George Samueli. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George in Budapest. George, you know, is peace in the air? I mean, there are peace proposals coming out now. The Chinese have come out with a 12-point program. What's coming out of the UK, France, and Germany is a bit unclear, but it's making the rounds that they're sounding out, as I said in my introduction, the Zelensky regime on how to move forward. I think there's some kind of reckoning going on here, but it doesn't mean it's going to end well here. Your thoughts on both proposals, other proposals, all proposals, George?
Well, I think you did give away the punchline a moment ago. The striking thing about that report from the Wall Street Journal about this UK, France, Germany proposal is that there is not one sentence, not one word about Russia's security concerns. So all the talk about, well, what can we do to provide some security for Ukraine, and how do we mount an early offensive by Zelensky so that he can be put in a stronger position for the negotiations, and can we liberate all of the Donbass and Crimea, or should we just simply settle for the Donbass, leave Crimea for a later date? There's nothing, not one word about what this conflict has been all about, why Russia launched this last year, which is Russia's security concerns. And there isn't. They have no idea of this. And now, was this because of these reporters at the Wall Street Journal, or was it because of the leaders of the NATO allies? But as long as they don't consider Russia's problems, or Russia, the issues that Russia has been raising for many years about NATO expansion and about guarantees that have some kind of merit, not just something that, well, we'll say something today and then we'll change our minds tomorrow, then there isn't going to be any kind of a peace negotiations. The Chinese proposals were interesting and were largely dismissed by the NATO countries. Interestingly enough, the one person who didn't dismiss them was Zelensky himself. Now, Zelensky, I think, is trying to think that he can charm his way anywhere and that he can get a meeting with Xi Jinping and that he can persuade Xi Jinping to come over to his side. I don't think, to be honest, that the Chinese proposals are going to go anywhere either.
Yeah, I guess Zelensky would need some scriptwriters from Washington and London to pull that rabbit trick off. Martin, let's stay with the Chinese plan, because I agree with George here. Part of it, and I'm going to read part of it here, countries should, quote, prevent bloc confrontation. I think we know that that's a reference to NATO. And work towards building, quote, a balanced, effective, and sustainable European security architecture. That's exactly what George was talking about. Martin.
Yeah, but I think the real problem here is that even though the Western elites are beginning to realize that they need to start looking at a solution for Ukraine, they're taking so long about stepping in this direction, you know, and you talk about script writers for Zelensky. I think, you know, we need a script writer for Dumb and Dumber, or a sequel for Schultz and Macron, because the kind of statements that are coming from these camps are just incredible, absolutely astounding. I mean, how tone deaf of the situation can you be? It seems that both of these leaders can agree on one thing. They want now a deadline. They want something set in progress for peace talks. So they seem to agree on a fundamental position, which we haven't had before. The news is Zelensky is the problem. That's what they've agreed on. That's reading in between the lines, is that this guy isn't moving in the direction we need to move in. But you talk about Zelensky's problems. What I think is interesting is that the West, France and Germany, they have their own problems. And what we're witnessing now is a shift towards this narrative of we need to get a peace process moving, and moving quite quickly, because Macron and Schulz are thinking about their own political credibility. They're thinking about their own camps, and how much longer this situation can go on for, because you have now a key date coming up, which is 2024. That seems like a long way away, but the Biden camp has recognized that from the summer onwards, he's going to have to start campaigning, even going to places like Flint, which he's afraid of catching all sorts of appalling diseases from. And he's going to have to explain to humble Americans who are struggling to eat or even survive why he hasn't pumped hundreds of billions of dollars into jobs, healthcare, roads, hospitals, instead of funding a war in a country which they can't find on a map of the world. So you've got this dichotomy of logic going on, I think, between Zelensky and the West and Europe. The Europeans look at the problem slightly differently from Macron and Schulz. But I mean, Schulz is so tone deaf. He's so out of touch with realities. He just recently visited Brazil and South Africa, BRICS countries, hoping that he could stir up some sort of antagonism against Russia from those countries. I mean, what planet is this guy on? You know, obviously that backfired spectacularly.
Well, let me go to George here right now. But, we're talking about peace proposals. And because, as it was reported by the journal, that the British, the French and the Germans are sounding out Zelensky. But I mean, Biden was in Kiev, okay, and in Warsaw, with some of the most bombastic language that we've heard from a long time from a man that just can't really deliver it anymore. So who cares what the European leaders have to say? I mean, it's so interesting. Is one of the biggest losers in all this is Europe. I mean, you have Schulz traveling around the world while the Americans, alleged by Seymour Hersh, destroyed his pride and joy of fueling German economy, thus the European economy. I mean, I have to agree with Martin. It is a bit delusional, but really, who cares what peace proposals come out of Western capitals? It has to come out of Washington. George.
No, exactly right. And this is what is so astonishing, and it's particularly when it comes to Germany, the economic powerhouse, their Wirtschaftswunder, which is their pride and joy, that they've become this great global economic power, is being jeopardized openly, contemptuously by the United States. And you have to wonder about the German public. I mean, are you going to stand for this? Are you going to tolerate essentially being relegated to a kind of a second-class status as an economic power? Seemingly, they are. And what's interesting about, you just said that the Americans are the ones who are the driving force for this. And as long as they can ignore every peace proposal, they can go on, whipping out their checkbook and there's, here's another $10 billion, then they can ignore all of the proposals coming out of Europe. And then it really doesn't matter what Schulz, Macron, or anyone else says. And, now the one caveat there is if the British decide to join forces with the French and the Germans. And that's why I thought, well, there may be something interesting here when I saw the headline, the British have now joined the French and Germans, because I think the Americans then might be isolated. But as I said earlier, I don't think there's anything here that would be of any interest. But of course, the Americans can pull the plug on Zelensky at any time of choosing. So all this talk about, well, we got to, everything depends on Zelensky, and it's his war, and nothing depends on Zelensky. Everything depends on Washington, because it's Washington that's just simply has given him this open checkbook.
Yeah, but Martin, following on what George has said there, I mean, this is a case of moral hazard. I mean, Zelensky has no inclination whatsoever to change what's going on now. I mean, look, as you said, when Biden goes on the campaign, he's going to be asking, why are you paying the pensions of Ukrainians? Why are you paying for their health care? Why are you paying for everything else? I mean, we everyone knows this incident that happened in Ohio. I mean, the stark contrast there that is apparent for all to see. So I don't see Zelensky. I mean, if it's all, nothing about Zelensky without Zelensky, I don't see he has any reason to change his behavior right now. The checks continue to come in.
Exactly. And I think that's really the key point. George's point is a fascinating one. You know, there is no real impetus yet, but there could be. And I think it's pretty fascinating that when you boil down the essence of what Macron and Schulz are saying to Zelensky, which, you know, could be, we could be forgiven for making mockery of it, for creating levity of it, because it is hilarious in the respect that the French and Germans are saying to Zelensky, look, we need you to move towards some sort of peace talks with Russia. And to encourage you to do that, what we're proposing to do is give you a whole ton load more of guns and ammo and cash and whatever you need, because that would actually help you in the negotiating table.
And also, just for your viewers to understand, essentially, everything up to NATO membership, so some kind of security arrangement, a lot more cash, and a lot more weapons. Okay, so Martin, so Zelensky accepts that, but why would the Russians accept it? I mean, you got to talk to the Russians, and that's just what makes this a mockery of everything. Keep going, Martin.
Yeah, I think they've been airbrushed out of the equation, but I don't think that will last too long. I think it may be media doing that. Media plays a big role here. But for the moment, you know, Zelensky has no real incentive. What I think could happen, and I think certain corners of some analysts have alluded to this, is that I think at a certain point, that relationship between Zelensky and Europe is going to run into run into rough waters, and it's already happening. You can see that there are some indications of this already. But I think that at a certain point. I think you're quite wrong, Peter. I think the Europeans are in a very strong position because finally it will be Schulz and it'll be Macron who can actually say to Zelensky, look, we've had enough of this. If you don't play along and take our proposal seriously, we may well actually cut the funding to you. We may actually reduce.
Well, Martin, to counter your point, if Schulz goes rogue, well, they always have Annalena Baerbock, and Washington will promote a regime change in Germany. George, I'm not crazy. They could do that, George.
No, they absolutely would do that. I mean, the Americans have been very, very wary about Schulz from the beginning. You know, as we've talked about many times before, the Americans have never trusted the German Social Democrats going back to the 1950s through to the 70s with Willy Brandt and Helmut Schmidt, then through to the 2000s with Gerhard Schroeder. They just don't like the Social Democrats, and they would love to see the back of Schulz. And, you know, we saw how contemptuously they treated Schulz. So Annalena Baerbock is very much the person they have in mind.
George. We'll have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the home edition to remind you we're discussing some real news. All right, let's go back to Martin Marrakesh. Martin, you know, it's very interesting. The media is a flood with allegations that China has already been or may start supplying arms to Russia. I see no indication that Russia needs arms, but okay, these are the media stories. Also, this ridiculous talk about Russia and China getting closer together, as if that suddenly appeared to some people. This is something that's been going on for a very long time. And I find it really astounding how mainstream media, oh my goodness, you know, they're very much asleep at the wheel here, okay? And one more thing here. I think it was in Munich, the Chinese foreign minister, he was challenged by our old favorite, Joseph Borrell, the foreign policy czar of the European Union. And he said, you know, it'd be crossing one of the EU's red lines if China supplied arms to Russia. And he said, but you supply arms to Ukraine. So what is the difference? He said, a very big difference, and apparently ran for the door, didn't answer what that difference is. Martin.
Well, I don't think there's anything remarkable about world leaders not replying to Joseph Borrell's questions, the Godlet-in-Chief of the European Union's so-called foreign policy. Look, I think this is a media story. I mean, I hate to keep coming back to media because I'm a journalist, but I do think it's a media story. I think this is a real story about how selective Western media is when it touches China. you know, it just roots out all the nuances and sticks to the cliches from the beginning. It isn't really a story at all that China is getting into bed with Russia and getting involved in the arms race, which has been created by the West from just a few weeks ago. If you remember the panic that we experienced over tanks, tanks was the new subject, and tanks, American tanks and German tanks, Leopold 2 tanks, Leopard 2 tanks, and the British Challenger tanks, has all become a big story, which we haven't heard about much in the last few weeks. Sure. Because no one believes it. No one believes that Biden will ever get around to sending the Abrams M1 tank. And even if he does, what numbers are you talking about? Like 30 or something stupid? I mean, it doesn't really make any sense. Now, I think China is a media story. I think it's been distorted like other key stories which have been skewered and distorted to fit a certain narrative. The main one for me is the panic that we've seen between Biden's camp and Zelensky's. Just a few weeks ago, Zelensky was in Washington. What was he doing there? Well, I think he was being briefed by Biden and telling him to get a move on with certain things. I don't think he took that very seriously. It seemed that Biden was affected by this and felt the need to send a few key officials to Zelensky in Kiev, namely Burns, the CIA director, to affirm a point, which to their credit, and this really pains me to admit this, the Washington Post actually did report. They did actually write in a rather nuanced, highbrow article, which probably a few people read, they actually did make the point that the Biden administration is delivering a message to Zelensky, which is that you haven't got too much time. And the reason why he hasn't got too much time to go ahead and achieve any other gains that the Americans hope he will make on the battlefield is because I believe the Republicans in America have given Biden a coded message that you've had your spending spree now with Ukraine, but it can't continue. We're not saying we're going to cut it, but we won't agree to the huge amounts that we signed off before now we're in the House. And so Biden has transmitted this message to the Ukrainians, and he's basically said, look, you've got until summer, or the end of summer, because then things start getting really difficult. You're going through kit at a phenomenal rate. I mean, this is record-breaking. You know, this is military records being broken here. The amount of kit that he goes through is just unbelievable. No one knows where it all goes, where it ends up.
Exactly. Time, I mean, it's unclear if it's even being used on the front, okay? Yeah. It's unclear, okay? Let me go to George now. George, I mean, Martin makes some very smart points here, but the rhetoric is not changing. As a matter of fact, they're doubling down on the rhetoric. But then we have all this background stuff. You know, time is running out. We have to make a case. You know, that can't go. That can't exist side by side for too much longer. George.
No, I do think that the Americans, as always, are hedging their bets. You know, they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. So you have, on the one hand, you have Biden doing the whole gung-ho thing in Warsaw and Kiev. And then you have they leak these stories to the Washington Post. That way, if this turns out well, hey, it was all because we hung tough and we showed Putin what's what. If things don't turn out well, then we can blame it all on Zelensky. Well, we told Zelensky that, you know, he needs to get off. Exactly. So there's something for everyone. Americans always do this. There's always the sort of the hardliners and the softliners. And then, you know, you take your pick depending on how it works out. But going back to your point about China, you're absolutely right. The friendship between Russia and China, you know, goes back to really the Yeltsin era. I mean, that's when really it began, and it was obviously an expression then of Russian weakness, of vulnerability. They needed to find an ally, and this has been growing in strength year after year. Now some people have somehow woken up to this and say, whoa, look, so, you know, Russia and China are very close. We need to split them up. Or something. And so, well, how the hell are you going to split them up? I mean, neither side has the slightest interest that, whoa, well, I better join forces with the Americans against the Chinese. You know, that's a really good idea. That's a great strategy.
And on top of it, Martin, we have news reports that more advisors are going to Taiwan. And so Blinken wants to challenge his Chinese counterpart about rules-based order and all this. So, and the Chinese have to say, why are you putting more advisors, technicians, whatever word you want to use, on Taiwan, which you, the United States recognize as part of China. Okay, so why would the Chinese have any interest in changing course right now when they see on their flank saber rattling? And that's something they take very seriously, Martin.
Yeah, and I think the Chinese are probably more than aware than most countries of that that rather unsavory mention of Obama when referring to Joe Biden, which applies totally to Biden's foreign policy initiatives since taking office. You know, don't underestimate Joe Biden's ability to flip it up. Yes. I'm paraphrasing, of course. You know, name one foreign policy initiative that Biden can actually say, I've nailed, you know, I've done good here. You might argue that
destroying the North Stream pipelines, he succeeded.
Exactly. And a lot of voters will resonate with that. A lot of them will connect with that because that put a shot in the arm to the American economy, that created growth, that created jobs. And I get that. But on a longer term, when we look at the foreign policy layout, you know, wherever Biden goes, he usually messes things up, you know. And I wonder whether the Taiwan story is really a media distraction to shift the media narrative now away from Ukraine from August, September, October onwards, where things are going to get really tough in Ukraine, when these tanks, even if they arrive, you know, they're not going to make any real difference. I mean, if you're in Putin's position now and you're talking to your generals, the generals surely must be planning a spring offensive because there's an opportunity there. There's a gap there. You know, and I've read about it from Western media who, you know, military people, journalists who are much better informed than I am, are talking about a spring offensive. And so I think this is really spooking Biden. You know, he's got a countdown now from the summer onwards to being reelected. And time is not on his side, you know. And when the stories turn against him in Ukraine, I think he will be looking for a new story on the foreign policy circuit. And China and Taiwan seems to be right, particularly when Britain is helping him so much, I'm ashamed to say.
Yeah, or maybe we'll have another spat of balloons. Who knows? That was another one of those interesting tank stories. Okay. Yeah, fascinating. George, you and I have talked about this on our podcast. If it really was Democrat versus Republican, if it was really conservative versus liberal, and you wanted to win votes, well, it's Biden's war. It's going badly. It's very, very expensive. And you and I have been bewildered by this forever, okay, because it is Biden's war. He has a tendency to, you know what, with foreign policy. It's a no-brainer, but it pulls the curtain away, and you can see the uniparty, the war party, and the military-industrial complex, their interests. It's beyond politics. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The Republicans, you know, they have an open goal, and they don't seem to be able to just, you know, kick the ball. You know, it's there, right there.
Just nudge it over the line.
Yeah. It's quite extraordinary because we know that had it been the other way around and Trump were president and this war was going on in Ukraine, the Democrats would be saying, this is Trump's war. This is Trump's war. You know, but instead, you know, the Republicans are kind of, you know, all over the place. And that's because they have this atavistic attitude toward Russia. They simply, you know, to them, you know, even though they dislike Biden, you know, they hate Biden and everything, but somehow, you know, Russia is still the embodiment of evil. And so therefore, you know, the best that they can come up with, well, Biden should have sent the weaponry sooner. He should have done more earlier. He should have been tough. That's why Russia invaded. Biden was weak. So they've now finally come up with how to answer the question. Yeah, it's Biden's fault. He was too weak. He should have made clear to Putin whatever it is he was supposed to make clear to Putin. And that's, you know, and that's it. And that's why I think Republicans will fail to exploit, because as Martin said, yeah, I mean, things could really blow up in Biden's face, and where electorally he should be punished, the Republicans are just simply going to bungle it.
Okay, but let me, we have 1 minute left here. Martin, even though the Republicans will continue to go along with Biden's Ukraine policy, I don't think that's going to be the case in Europe, because we just had these massive protests in Berlin over the last news cycle. It's more than rhetoric. This is everyday lived life. And hegemony wasn't supposed to cost you when it comes to eggs and cappuccinos and going out in the evening. Now it is. Last 45 seconds to you.
Yeah, life is getting tougher, and it takes a while for the average man in the street to understand the dynamics of a huge issue like the Ukraine war and how it affects his pocket. Heating bills just gone through the roof 3-4 times in the UK, for example. I've mentioned before, in the UK, we have pensioners now freezing to death in their apartments. Germany's economy, I think this week, economists said it is now officially in recession. And a lot of German companies are now flocking to America to set up companies there just to stay in the game. But, you know, Biden, I think Europe is going to be the problem sooner enough, sure. I mean, these people cannot hang on so much longer. And I think Macron and Schulz are quite sensitive to that. They do understand that their time is running out for them. But I think also that I wonder, we talked about Republicans in America and Biden. I wonder if the nightmare scenario for Joe Biden leading up to presidential elections is that it becomes a one-issue race, which would be Ukraine.
Okay, then that's a question for another program. We've run out of time. I want to thank my guests in Marrakesh and in Budapest, and I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.